Before we get into this episode, I want to put out a trigger warning that this episode touches on sexual violence. If that's something that you're not comfortable listening to, that's cool. You don't have to. Hey, and welcome back to It's Pretty Personal, a podcast all about sharing South Asian stories. How are you doing? As the title suggests, this episode is a lot deeper than the other topics that I cover on the podcast, but I also believe that it's super important to shed a light on this because firstly, it's so stigmatized within our community, but also as females, we're not really taught about sexual violence or healing, and I really want this episode to be educational. Today, I'm joined by Ashley, a researcher of sexual violence in the South Asian community. She has recently completed her research titled Reclaiming Shakti, A Journey to Wellbeing for South Asian Immigrant Women, Survivors of Sexual Violence. She's been advocating for survivors for the last 4 years after noticing the gaps in the current systems that support South Asian survivors, having been gone through it herself. Her belief is that healing and support should be for survivors by survivors, and she uses a holistic approach. After having to find alternative therapies outside of talk therapy, she felt it was important to understand the lived experience of South Asian survivors, who are often left in the margins of sexual violence research and practice. And a massive concept in our community is izzat, or honour, something that we talk about in the episode, as well as this massive culture of silence around sexual violence. A crime survey for England and Wales combined the data from 2017 and 2020, and it showed that fewer than 1 in 6, so around 16%, had reported their assault to the police. The same survey showed that 40% didn't report the crime because they were embarrassed, whilst 38% thought that the police couldn't help. Also, a lot has come out in the media in recent years, like the Me Too movement, which went viral in 2017, and inspiring millions of people to come out to share their stories around sexual violence, saying Me Too, because they too were survivors of sexual violence. And it's a global movement that sparked a huge amount of social and legal change. April is also Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and I've been seeing loads of resources being shared on social media to help raise awareness, but also for those that are looking for help. I've actually added some support and help plans in the episode description below if you would like to check them out. Also, before we get into this episode, please don't forget to follow and subscribe to this podcast if you're new, to write a 5-star review if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, because honestly, reviews really help podcasts grow. And also to follow this podcast on social media, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Pretty Personal. Hi, Ashley, how are you?
Hello. Thanks for having me. I'm good. How are you?
I'm really, really well, thank you. I know this is a bit of a time difference because if you haven't realised from Ashley's accent, she's from New Zealand and I'm from the UK.
Yeah, so it's morning for me but night for you, right?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's like 13 hours ahead. I'm like, so basically I'm in your yesterday.
Yep. Buzzy, right?
So before we get into it, I thought we would actually get to know you a little bit better.
Okay.
I know today's episode is very deep, and I do want to just put a trigger warning out there that if you're not comfortable listening to this, that is completely fine. Like, what we're talking about is stigmatized and taboo, but I also feel like it's so important to talk about this topic as well. So before we get into that, let's know a little bit more about Ashley. So Ashley, the first question is, what is something that you love about New Zealand?
Oh, so much. I really love living here. But probably my favorite thing will be like the crisp, fresh, clean air. Like, hands down, nothing beats going outside and just breathing in. Mm.
Love that. Okay, next question is, like, is there something that you're grateful for today?
Ooh, I'm grateful that I get the opportunity to sit here with you and talk about the stuff that I'm really passionate about.
Oh, that's so sweet. I'm so glad that you're here to talk about something that I don't know much about but want to learn about.
Mm-hmm. Sharing, right?
Exactly. What is one achievement that you're very, very proud of?
Completing my research. It was a rough ride, and there were many times that I thought I wasn't going to make it. And now here I am talking to you about it. Like, it's so awesome.
Your research is something that we're going to talk about in more depth later on in this episode as well. And finally, say if it's been a really stressful day, how do you relax?
Oh, I'm like obsessed with dogs. So probably giving my doggos lots of pats and cuddles and treats and actually taking them for a walk.
Mm.
That's my go-to.
Oh, what dogs do you have?
I've got two. One is a bull mastiff and one's a bull mastiff cross pointer. So one of my dogs is actually bigger than me. So
that must have been a struggle to like take it on walks and stuff, because they're really like, they walk you basically, right?
Yeah. Well, except the one who's bigger than me, he only moves in one speed. So he's not like a very agile dog. Whereas my other one, she's like in, out, like chasing everything. Whereas George just kind of, you know, he does his own thing.
Yeah. So let's get into this episode. So like we said, we're talking about sexual abuse and sexual violence, but also the mental impact that it has in terms of healing, especially from a South Asian perspective. And I think the biggest thing that I just wanted to really ask you is like, how common is it?
Unfortunately, it's too common. The World Health Organization said that about 25% of women worldwide would have experienced some form of sexual violence at some point in their lives. And the sad truth is that when it comes to South Asian communities, we actually don't have solid statistics because, you know, there's such a huge lack of reporting, lack of disclosure, a huge culture of silence. So we don't actually know what the statistics are in South Asian communities, but worldwide, it's supposedly 25% of women.
That's crazy. What the hell?
Yeah, it's like a quarter of us.
Yeah, and I was actually doing some digging myself and I found this statistic, which said that in 2019/2020, there were 179,000 sexual offences recorded by the police in the UK, and in the UK alone.
Oh, I got goosebumps. Yeah, so as you can see, it's a big problem.
And I think the problem is as well, it's so stigmatised and like loads of people don't talk about it as well, which is horrible. And I think a lot of people don't really know what it consists of because no one really teaches you it. And this is the issue, is that no one teaches you it. So people don't really know what consists of sexual abuse and what doesn't. And I was wondering if you can kind of give like an overview of what actually does consist of sexual abuse.
Mm-hmm. So I have the World Health Organization definition here, which I can read out to you. So it defines sexual violence as any sexual act, attempt to obtain a sexual act, unwanted sexual comments or advances, or acts to traffic or otherwise direct against a person's sexuality using coercion by any person, regardless of their relationship to the victim, in any setting, including but not limited to home and work. And so I know that's a bit difficult to understand. It's quite wordy, but sexual violence is really just any sexual act or anybody trying to get something sexual from you, like without your consent. And, you know, that can come in so many different ways, like coercion or trafficking, and it can be from anybody and everybody. It's not specific to, for example, people that you don't know. Like one of the most common myths is that people experience sexual violence from, you know, people outside of their communities or families, but that's actually not true. A lot of the times the perpetrator is known to the survivor victim.
Wow. And how come you decided to do your research on sexual violence?
So I'm a survivor. I've been healing for the last 8-9 years. And I guess I just wasn't really happy with the support that I was getting. Again, I was really fortunate that my first university degree was in psychology. So I kind of understood mental distress, mental health. And when mine started deteriorating, I took myself to therapy. And I remember there was actually, you know, like the fifth session when I finally disclosed and I said to my therapist, but I don't think that's got anything to do with how I'm feeling now. And bless her, she was so lovely. She just sat and listened to me and said, okay, but I'd like you to come back if you feel safe enough to. And I guess that was the beginning of my own like healing journey. And through the process, like everything that I tried, I found that I needed to go out and seek my own alternative therapies. And so I guess maybe 3 years ago, I decided to go into counseling and really just learning about the literature that was out there, the understanding that health professionals had of South Asian culture And I just kept falling short. There just wasn't enough about us and our experiences. There's a lot of literature and research on sexual violence, but a lot of the time it's based on Western populations. And so that's also problematic because then, like health practitioners and providers, they try to apply this Western literature on people who come from non-Western backgrounds. And so because of that, I just got really motivated to add to the very small number of literature that are on us because, you know, we need to talk about it. We need to break this culture of silence. And I guess for me, the way to do it was knowing that it was bigger than just me.
Definitely. And it is a lot bigger than just you. If we just saw the stats, like, it's ridiculous how many people actually go through with this. And it's true. It's like, it happens so often, yet we don't talk about this kind of stuff. And I think the biggest reason that I can deduce is shame. And in South Asian culture, your izzet, your honor, shame is such a big concept of our culture. Is you shouldn't bring shame on the family. You shouldn't bring dishonor to your family. Like, not gonna lie, like, shame and dishonor and stuff is man-made terms. It doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. It's just a way of control. Yeah. And I'm really glad that you brought that point up because, like, in my research, I found that shame, so shadim and izzet, they were two of the most influential barriers for South Asian women to report. Because what happens is when, I guess, for example, Western scholars research these concepts, they always relate shame and honor back to Western understandings of shame and honor. And so Western understanding of honor is that it's a quality that everybody has. Whereas in South Asian cultures, izzet, honor, is actually, it's a position. It's either given to you or it's removed. And when it's removed, it's replaced by shame. And so unlike the Western understanding of shame, which is it's an emotion that, you know, many of us feel, the South Asian concept of shame is actually the consequence of honor being removed. So I'm really glad that you brought that up.
That's so interesting. And then I know that it's very case by case and everyone will process things in very different ways. How can it emotionally affect you?
Oh, there are so many ways. I would like to first say that, you know, the experiences of sexual violence, the experience of trauma and the way that different people cope with it is really unique to each person. And so I don't think that there's kind of like a one size fits all that all survivors or victims will experience this. But I guess I can talk a little bit about, well, a little bit, okay, or a lot about this. And so in my research, I actually created a framework which used the chakras to talk about these things. And so I've kind of talked about the emotional, physical, and spiritual effects of sexual violence and the barriers. So do you know much about the chakras?
No, please tell me.
Okay. So I'm talking about the seven major chakras. So your root chakra, your Muladhara, I guess that's where we get our sense of it's safe enough for me to exist. And so what happens for survivors, or victim survivors, is that when we experience sexual violence, our sense of safety, our security is all compromised. And so, you know, for many of us, we no longer feel safe in our bodies. We don't feel secure. We don't feel like there's people we can talk to, there's people we can trust. And so that all kind of inhibits our ability to exist safely. And culture goes into that as well, because the way, not saying that our culture is problematic, but there are parts of our culture that are problematic, which act as controlling factors. So, for example, the shadim, the izzet, the lack of autonomy for women, the lack of independence, that all comes from our culture and affects how we feel safe in our bodies. And so then the next chakra up, the sacral chakra, is Svadhisthana. That's like our ability to desire. And so what happens with sexual violence is all of a sudden, we don't feel like we're allowed to have desires. we don't feel it's safe enough to have our desires, because essentially in that act of sexual violence, we learned that actually my desire doesn't matter here. I didn't want to do this, but that didn't seem to matter. And, you know, some of the barriers that kind of keep that chakra blocked is the sexual conditioning that South Asian communities have for women and men. You know, for men, there's like two themes that came up in my research. One was that men are entitled to sex and that men are allowed to control women's bodies. That's it. The conditioning. Yeah.
What?
Right? I know. Like, I definitely, that was a point in my research process that I had to rage quit and walk away for a little bit.
Yeah. I understand why.
Yeah. So, like, for men, it's those two things. But for women, oh my God, the list is so, so big. Let me just find it for you. We are seen as both submissive and power, but women aren't allowed to talk about sex, let alone sexual violence. You know, we have to cover the way we dress. We have to monitor what we say. We have to monitor how we move around the world. Or actually, we don't monitor it. Everybody else seems to monitor it.
Yeah.
And we get taught that sex is actually only allowed within the confines of marriage for women. And even things like women not having control over their own reproductive system, it's still controlled by men. In that sense, like, we have so many more rules for sexuality and what it looks like for women, but only those two things, male entitlement for men. It's ridiculous, right?
It's so ridiculous. When I was thinking about that, it really feeds into the idea of a patriarchy and the fact that we are still living under a patriotic, or not patriotic, like, we are still living under a patriarchy. And it's like, if I have to say the one thing that I'm so passionate about is that, is like getting rid of the effing patriarchy, because I'm like, I'm so done.
Yeah, I refuse to dim myself or change myself to fit into a world that's largely patriarchal. That's the word, right?
Patriarchal, yeah.
Yeah.
I was getting mixed up with patriotic and I'm like, no, that's the wrong word.
Yeah, that's how much I hate it. Oh, so we've talked about the two bottom chakras, and then we have the solar plexus chakra, your manipura. And so the themes in that, that's where izzet and shadam sits, but also control and power. And so with that chakra, that's our ability to control. If survivors have had control and power used against them, their whole being feels like, well, I've got no control over anything. And so that chakra becomes blocked because there's things like izzet and shadam, like we talked about earlier, that really teach the survivor, well, you've got no control, because if you speak up, you'll lose your izzet and it will be replaced by shame. Or you've had someone abuse power and control over you. I guess those three are kind of like the physical effects of sexual violence and what we are healing when we go on this healing journey. And then we move up to the heart chakra, anahata, which is I love. And so for survivors, not all survivors, but for some survivors, it might be a thing of actually, it's not safe enough for me to love, because you've experienced such a violation. Like, you didn't consent to it. You did not want your body to be used the way it was, but someone did it anyway without any care for who you are or what you want. And so our ability to love safely is compromised. And the saddest part there is that grief actually blocks our heart chakra. So without allowing ourselves to grieve, and more so because when we do disclose to people, a lot of the times people say, oh, well, that happened in the past. Just, you know, like, forget about it. Don't worry about it. Or, you know, one mother told her daughter, who had disclosed to her in my research, told her, well, this is just what happens. We just get on with it. So things like that, community attitudes that don't allow survivors to actually grieve this gross violation that has happened to them. But in the heart chakra, that's also where resilience and empowerment sits. It's also where self-love and self-compassion sits. But we can't get to those things until we've grieved, until we've started opening that chakra. Because if you think about it, what is self-love? It's our ability to understand that we are deserving of love. But if this gross violation has happened and your heart is blocked by grief, grief that you've never been allowed to feel, how were you ever going to get to the point of like, oh, well, actually what happened to me was not okay. I do have something to grieve because I am worth loving. So that's like a huge emotional effect of sexual violence. Are you kind of keeping up with me, or is this?
I'm just like so interested. I'm like, literally, this is like, I'm in school and I'm like having a lesson on this. It's actually so interesting, which is why I'm really quiet.
Okay, that's good. That's good to know. So we've talked about Mooladhara, Swadhisthana, Manipura and Anahata. So the next one is the throat chakra, Vishuddha. And so from here, this is our expression center. So I express is what we feel here. Again, what we've talked about this earlier briefly of if we feel like it's not safe enough for us to express our most authentic version of ourselves. So what has happened to us, what our story is, disclosing, speaking one's truth, asking for help, communication. That means like our throat chakra is blocked. And so it's really hard for us to ask for help. It's really hard for us to speak out and say, hey, I'm a survivor. This happened to me and this wasn't okay. And like a big reason for that is because of the attitudes in our community, the attitudes in our world, the culture of silence, izzet, shadam, haya, all of that prevents us from actually expressing our truth. And so that is a kind of like the community reasons why emotionally we feel like it's not safe for us to speak our truth. But the other side of that is also we have professional services are so inadequate at understanding South Asian culture. There, I said it. You know, the police don't understand enough about our culture. Counselors, therapists, mental health professionals, they don't understand enough about our culture. Policymakers, they don't understand enough about our culture. Who actually is out there who understands enough about us, who can actually understand our experiences without survivors needing to first explain their world, explain their experiences, validate the experiences and the things that come up for them, let alone heal? You know, that's so much emotional labor that you have to do before you even get to the point of starting your healing. So it's no wonder that people struggle to ask for help or speak their truth, because the barriers just don't make it easy for people to come out and talk about it. And so like with the heart chakra and the throat chakra, those are like huge emotional after effects, I guess, of sexual violence, is that we don't feel safe enough to openly love. We don't feel safe enough to openly express like our most authentic selves. So we've talked about the first five chakras. So the next one is Agna, which is our third eye chakra. And so this is kind of like the center where we witness the world. We witness ourselves, we witness the world, the people around us. And so what sits here is awareness and guidance. And so this is kind of like the beginning of the spiritual effects. And so awareness, you actually said this right at the very beginning. So many of us don't actually understand what sexual violence is. So there's that lack of awareness. And that was actually like a really big part of why this is problematic as well, because a lot of the older generation, especially women, they will just say to their daughters or daughter-in-laws or whoever when sexual violence is disclosed is that, well, this is just part of what happens. You know, it happened to me, it happened to your aunt, you just get over it. So things like that, like people just don't know that it's not okay because we don't talk about it. And also coming back to the sexual conditioning, because for women, we are taught that sex is only allowed within the confines of marriage. What that often translates to is, okay, once I am married, I have to give my husband everything. There's actually a really heartbreaking quote in my research where a mother actually tells her daughter, now that you're married, you are his mattress. You lie in the bed that you made, you are his mattress. And so attitudes like that, yeah, I can see your face. It's horrific, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because those are the messages we get. Of course, there's a lack of awareness about what sexual violence is, what's okay and what's not okay. And so like a really big step that we need to be taking is talking about it so that people can start understanding what is okay and what's not okay. And another theme sitting there, which is guidance, is right now, most of our guidance stems from Western perspectives, Western understandings of sexual violence, a lot of like support services. They try to impose Western ideas of selfhood. What I mean by that is like really individualistic ways of working with people. But we come from collective cultures. And so for us, we need to be mindful of like our community group, our family group, the group of people that we belong to, and how they can support us in this healing journey. So yeah, I guess those are kind of like the spiritual effects of sexual violence too, or barriers more so. And then we move up to the last chakra, which is your crown chakra, your Sahasrara, which is I am that I am. So that's you being wholly all that you are and accepting that. For many of us, because we are hiding this huge secret, we're, you know, like filled with shame and silence. And I think it's Brené Brown who says, the three ingredients you need for shame to survive is silence, secrecy, and judgment. And that's all found within our South Asian communities. You know, dripping with shame is how many survivors live their lives. And so it doesn't feel safe for us to be all that we are and show the world all that we are. Some of the ways that we need to be kind of addressing that is recognizing the importance of spiritual connections. And what I mean by that is like the bond that you have with others, the safe people in your life who support you, who love you for who you are. That's so important for people like us from collective cultures because we are all social creatures. We need to belong somewhere. So spiritual connections and using a holistic approach. So that's part of the reason why I created this framework was because I think when you go through the whole framework, you understand where the physical, the emotional, the mental, the spiritual effects and the things that influence South Asian survivors. And that's why it's important that we look at the whole system rather than just focusing on parts of it. I know that that was like a huge blah, 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 blah. So please feel free to ask any questions.
I'm just so intrigued because it's like so interesting. I felt like I was having this lesson. Like I literally felt like I was at school. I was like, okay, cool. This is like interesting. Oh shit. I did not know that. Wow. Like that was literally like what was going through my head like the whole time you were talking.
I loved watching your face process this.
Yeah, I'm glad that you're the only one that can see my face and not everyone listening can see my face.
Good. It's good. I could also see how like you just seem to be sitting there like absorbing it. So that was cool. Thank you.
No, honestly, thank you for making that because it's actually so true. I think the thing that really popped out to me was that, like you said, with shame and the elder generation. And it's so heartbreaking to see that the older generation had to just live with it. Because they didn't have any other choice. Like, it's really heartbreaking. In terms of that, like, how can we as the younger generation kind of help and educate the older generation? Because I'm not joking, like, anything with the word sex in it is literally off limits in South Asian culture. How do we even go about educating the older generation on sexual abuse?
Well, I think, first of all, we need to do that healing for ourselves. You know, we need to educate ourselves and increase our own awareness or shift our awareness. Because if we're trying to educate the older generation, but we don't yet feel comfortable with it, or we're not able to embody it, it's always going to feel so uncomfortable. It's always going to feel so foreign. So I think if we are able to talk to each other about it, so like, I guess our peers, our friends, our cousins, our family members who might understand, if we're able to talk to them about it and, you know, we start normalizing that within our own generations, then it becomes easier to talk to the older generation, because if we've not talked to our peers about it, and then all of a sudden we go and try to talk to our grandparents about it, we haven't had the opportunity to practice having these conversations or have the language. And as soon as our grandparents kind of question us or challenge us, we will shut down because, you know, like that discomfort and actually, no, maybe I shouldn't talk about it. So personally, I believe that the more we talk about it with each other, the easier it becomes to talk to the older generations about it. I guess on a second note as well, educating the community leaders and religious leaders. You know, a lot of the times it is the community leaders and religious leaders that are actually part of the problem.
Yep.
But they also hold so much power. And so trying to address that, because our community really listens to these people. So finding the people who are in positions of power and having conversations with them as well, so then they can also become advocates for survivors, advocates for changing this mentality in our community. But it is challenging and it takes time, which is why I believe we need to have our support system solid to make it easier to fight in the world.
That's very, very true advice. Something that I remember, so I studied law when I was in sixth form. And I remember being told that sexual abuse was one of the lowest conviction rates in the world because it's a very he said, she said scenario. And I was just wondering like whether that's true.
100%. It's also the least reported crime in the world. So least reported crime, least convicted. And you think about it, like the way that the system works as well, it puts so much pressure on the victim survivor. Like the whole process can be really re-traumatizing for the person anyway. And then, you know, so many times you go through that process and then there's no conviction. So we've just re-traumatized someone and just taught them yet again that actually, no, your experience was not valid. And that's so heartbreaking because that's so disempowering. It's awful. It's absolutely awful. But yeah, the hardest part is navigating that whole he said, she said thing, especially for historical abuse.
But do you feel like movements like, for example, Me Too was such a massive movement and the fact that it was brought into mainstream media, do you think that's actually helped people and helped the system?
Well, it sure as hell helped me because I only disclosed my abuse when Me Too happened. That's when it started for me because all of a sudden I saw stories of other people who'd had similar experiences to me. And I thought, hey, I'm not alone. And so for me, that was really powerful because it was that thing of like, well, if not me, who? You know, if I don't share my story now, who else might suffer or go through the same thing or might have had a similar experience to me? And we're all sitting in silence and shame, hiding this really painful experience. And so for me too was really powerful because I guess it gave me permission to share my story. And the effects from that was like me sitting here right now with you talking about this. Came from that because Me Too allowed me to share my story and say Me Too. And I'm not even kidding, Preethi. Like in a year, I had about 30 women who reached out to me and said, oh my God, I had no idea this happened to you. This also happened to me. Like, I'm so glad you shared this. Thank you. And like, I would say about half of these women were women that I saw weekly. We were at each other's houses. We went to like our prayer meetings and stuff together. We spent so much time together and not one of us had any idea that this had happened to someone else.
Oh my God. It's this thing. It's like you never know what someone is going through and it's ridiculous because you think you know someone, but like deep down, that's what I'm just saying. It's so important to just be nice and kind to everyone because you just don't know what people are going through. Like,
yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, for me, Me Too was incredibly powerful.
And I'm sure it did for so many other people, but for people that have maybe that are still quite scared, that might be listening, that have gone through something like this, and they're a bit scared or worried to be like, oh my God, I want to say it, but I don't know how to say it, or I don't know what to do and what to talk to, because that first step is always so scary. what would you say to those people? Like, how could you advise them?
Well, first of all, I would say to you that what happened to you was and will never be your fault. And only you get to choose when and if you are ready to tell your story, to share your story, to disclose. Only you get to decide that. Just because people around you might be pushing you to, or, you know, you see someone else who's reported it or disclosed it, but you don't feel that you're ready, that's okay. You know, it's something deeply personal. And the truth is, you know, we have to think about safety. If you're still in the environment where the harm happened, disclosing there might not be the safest thing for you. And so giving yourself the permission to do it when you feel ready. And, you know, for some people, they might never disclose it, but it's a deeply personal decision. And so really just be mindful of whether it's safe for you to disclose or not. If you want to do it anonymously, or if you just want to get it out and then do something else and pretend that hasn't happened for now, that's also okay. So there are like helplines that you can call. There's like the rape crisis that you can go to, and you were actually allowed to say, I just need to say this, but I don't want to follow it up with a report. I don't want it to turn into a big thing yet. I'm not ready for that. You were allowed to. So you are in control of your narrative.
And what I'm going to do in this episode description is I'm actually going to put some helplines in for the UK, but also try to find some that are international as well. Just because I think a lot of times people don't know like who to turn to or like where to go.
Yeah. You know, if you're struggling or you just need a sister to talk to, like reach out to me. Like I'd be more than happy to hold space for you, actually, because us survivors, we got to stick together. Power in numbers.
And of course, you started Maharani Movement, which is definitely a byproduct of your experience. And it's how, that's how I found you, to be honest.
Yeah, it's because I, you know, we just need, and I didn't actually talk about that when I talked about the framework, but one of the most powerful facilitators for healing is actually having a community of South Asian survivors. Because, you know, when we get a room full of South Asian survivors, so part of what I did before I started Maharani Movement was I started like a support group for South Asian survivors. And when you get a room full of us and we can just be ourselves and talk about what has happened to us without having to explain the cultural dynamics or how our family works and all of that, there is so much healing that happens. And for me, building a network or community of other survivors that I could reach out to for support was probably the thing that helped me the most in my healing. And so this idea of having South Asian survivor big sisters, South Asian survivor mentors, you know, that's really powerful because again, it taps into our need for spiritual connections. So support and community.
That's amazing.
Maharani Movement.
Yes. And I think it's such an amazing thing that you're doing, connecting people who have gone through something very similar in a time where they feel like they must feel so alone. I think that's so great.
Thank you.
No, honestly, I think the work you're doing is fantastic. And I think what you're doing is so amazing. And your research is like so freaking needed. Like it's so needed.
Well, thank you. It's been interesting. Like I'm sitting here and I'm talking to you about all of this, but it's also so terrifying, you know, like sticking my neck out in the culture of silence, talking about my own experiences is really scary. But I think someone said to me yesterday that we've got to go with our gut and we've got to do what we feel is right, because if there isn't anything out there for us, we've got to create it, because this is bigger than just us. And, you know, she was so right. Like I really needed that, which is why I'm really grateful I got the opportunity to sit here and talk to you and, you know, talk about my research, talk about my experiences, because I think that's how we start addressing the culture of silence.
No, definitely. And I think you're so brave. I remember the first thing we ever bonded on was Brené Brown's book.
She is my queen.
Yeah, so she had the courage to be vulnerable. And I think that's what really redefined vulnerability for me. Because growing up in like Punjabi, there isn't really a word for vulnerability that I knew of. And like, I didn't really know what it was. But then after reading that book, everyone kind of was like, oh, don't be vulnerable, because vulnerable always had very negative connotations to it. It's like, oh, don't be vulnerable, someone can take advantage of you. That was the first thing that anyone linked vulnerability with. When actually, yeah, the power to have your own story out there, the power to be vulnerable and strip down all those layers and literally bare your soul to people is something that's like so strong. And like, I really, really rate people that can do that, because that is not easy. Like you can easily hide behind all those walls and it can never come out. But it's like battle armor, isn't it? It's like you can leave your armor on or you can take all your armor off and just see what happens. But I think it's so brave. And I think that's the bravest thing that someone can ever do, is to be vulnerable.
Yeah. I think for me, there's like no going back from being vulnerable now, because, you know, like 7 years ago, not being vulnerable with myself, not being vulnerable with the world around me almost killed me. And so having to climb my way back out of rock bottom through being vulnerable, like I'm never going back. Vulnerability is the way forward for me, because the other side of that is to be not vulnerable and almost, you know, like I almost died. And so I'm not willing to give that up for anybody, for anything. I think vulnerability is a huge strength that people have. And I'm like you, like, the people who were vulnerable, oh my God, oh, the world changes. And the, you know, like they're just such inspiring people.
Genuinely so inspiring. And they can be anybody. It can be the person that lives next door to you. And I genuinely think they are the bravest people.
What does Brené Brown say? Strong back, soft front. You know, so you like make sure that you've got a strong back. You can stand up strong and tall and know when to walk away. Know what your boundaries are, can say no, can know when to like not give too much of yourself. But the soft front means that you can have vulnerable conversations. You can have those scary, courageous conversations with people. So it's that balance, you know, like if we've got our armor on all the time, that's probably not the healthiest way for us to move forward. But if we've got no armor on anywhere, like that's also not the most healthiest way for us to move forward. So it's that balance.
For sure. Actually, honestly, I've had such a good time. I'm just like, I've learned so much today. Like it genuinely felt like I was in a school day and I had that lesson in school that I was never taught. And I'm so, so, so glad that I actually got the opportunity to talk to you about it, because it's like you said, it's so common. It's never spoken about, especially in our South Asian culture. And I hope that someone that's listening, I hope it helps someone out there, because that's all I really want it to do.
Well, thank you for using your platform to, I guess, share the voices of survivors. Like that's just so important. And, you know, thank you. Like I'm so grateful that I've been able to do this here with you. Like, thank you. And I hope to anybody who's listening that like, you've learned something from this. And like, I hope you know that, again, what happened to you was and will never, ever be your fault.
I want to thank Ashley for coming on the podcast and sharing her research and her advice on healing. Like I said in the episode, I felt like I was just listening the whole time and being this like avid student and learning about something that isn't widely spoken about yet so common. I really hope this episode provides you with value, whether that's learning something new or comfort and reassurance if you are a survivor. And if you ever want to share your thoughts on the episode, then please do on social media. You can tweet me or send me a DM on Instagram at prettypersonal, or if you're old school, you can always email me at itsprettypersonal@gmail.com. Don't forget to follow and subscribe to this podcast, because I do release episodes every single Tuesday. So I'll speak to you guys next week. Take care. Bye.